Okay. Hey, everyone, and good evening. Welcome back to a QS Flashcast. We like to try and fit in these flashcasts kind of as quickly as we can when something happens, or if we just, end up having myself or another guest just readily available to talk about something that needs to be talked about. Normally, they don't run as long as normal QS casts do, so they're really condensed and normally, they just talk about something immediate that happened. On today's docket, as basically as immediate as you can get, Pete Casella is rejoining me. What's up, Pete?
How's it going today, Chaz?
Yep, and we are going to talk about the probably the most momentous unbannings or ban and restricted announcements as you can get in modern history so far. So they unbanned, I'll just get right to it, unbanned Blood Braid Elf and Jace the Mind Sculptor. So they pretty much did the unthinkable here, right? I mean, this has been talked about pretty much since Modern's inception because these two cards, Jace was on the ban list from the start, and then Blood Braid pretty much joined it not too much longer after because of Deathrite Shaman and all that nonsense. But Blood Braid Elf is back, and obviously to try and combat Jace the Mind Sculptor. So let's just quickly kind of unravel this, Pete. What did you kind of get from this, and what was kind of the reaction immediately from a store's perspective?
Well, from the store's perspective, we were sold out immediately of those two cards, as you might imagine. Around that. The spikes are unreal. Jace the Mind Sculptor is already over 200. You can find damaged ones for 150 if you're really lucky still. That might last another day. Blood Braid, I think, is up to about 15 already. That down from the $2, I think it was, a dollar or two, because there were a couple of printings of it at that F&M promo, which I'm actually afraid to look at. We are in a time period, though, where I think the question on everybody's minds is, why now? We were talking about this a little bit beforehand. Modern is in a very healthy point in time. The Pro Tour just happened this weekend. We had 7 of the 8 decks were different. The only duplicate copy was 5 color humans, and the builds were different because a generic 5 color humans deck means you can play whatever you find appealing to you at the time. One of the decks played Kessig Malcontents in the main and made top 8, which is a pretty cool idea. And there's all these different options that you have running around Modern. There's probably 20 decks that could make a top 8 of a Pro Tour pretty viably, depending on whose hands they're in. So why now? Why throw Jace the Mind Sculptor back into the fray? Why throw Blood Braid Elf into the fray? Well, from a store's perspective, I have to imagine it has something to do with Masters 25 coming out later in the summer. I'd be shocked if Blood Braid and Jace the Mind Sculptor weren't both in that set. It's incentive for Wizards to sell more packs. It's incentive for people to buy more packs. So it's good for everybody having more stuff in the market. The downside is what happens to the metagame as a whole when it's about as healthy as it has ever been. If Jund came back, for example, and that became the top tier deck again, you have Storm running around as the hard counter to Jund. For in a lot of ways, it can just kind of go off like, hey, I found a Gifts Ungiven. That was a cool Blood Braid into Liliana the Veil, like you said earlier. I'm more worried about control, though. If they start playing Jace the Mind Sculptor and the Jeskai decks, and I'm sure they will, those decks were already having a bit of success. I believe a Star City Open got won by a Jeskai deck. There have been some top 8 showings in Classics pretty frequently in one or two of the Opens. Now we're into this whole new time period of two cards could warp a format that was previously very, very healthy.
Yeah, so, you said a couple great points there, so I'm going to kind of respond. Firstly, we know that Jace is in Masters 25. They released that over the course of the Pro Tour weekend. And I undoubtedly think Blood Braid Elf is in this set. It wouldn't surprise me at all. So to me, this is 100% about Masters 25. Because like you just said, and like we talked about earlier, Modern, it's been going along. It hasn't really had, it's had issues here and there. But this current iteration of Modern, it had a couple little imperfections. There's some cards that you could talk about that probably aren't that healthy for the format. Tron came up a lot. Honestly, would have rather see something about Tron happen than this whole thing. But it just seemed like the pacing. Wait, this was all planned from the start that they were going to let the Modern Pro Tour happen. They weren't going to touch anything. They had a Master set coming up, and Iconic Masters didn't really do a whole lot. I don't know how far into the design cycle they would have had to been, but I'm fairly certain they went ahead and just they knew they were going to unban this right after the Pro Tour. I mean, it's just because Modern was that a near perfect. It's as close to perfect as you will ever get for a Modern or for a Magic format. I think everyone can pretty much agree that's where Modern was right now. So, you know, you have everyone having a good time. You have everything going on. Everything's cool. You had a Lantern Control. You had a top eight or Lantern Control takedown of Pro Tour. And the top eight was seriously 100% like close to diverse, like you said, Pete. And then you had a pretty big GP to follow it. And then what happens? Boggles takes it down and another pretty diverse top eight. So, like you said, there's about 20 different decks that can top eight or take down a large Modern event at any given time. And that's a sign of a really healthy format. So everyone's having a good time, and it's like Wizards just comes in and like cuts the nastiest gas you could probably ever smell in your life. And then just says, you know what? See you guys. Like, go buy some Modern Masters or some Masters 25 packs while you're at it. Like, I'm okay with it. You know, Jace and Bloodbraid, you know, it's fine. Maybe. They spark new archetypes, but I mean, we really don't know. We don't know yet. So everything is kind of open, and it's a question mark. And, you know, just one of the downsides already of having this announcement is, you know, it's already becoming Jace versus, you know, non-Jace cards, or what could we play to beat Jace and Jace? You know, and I just had a feeling that could happen because that's always what this devolves down to whenever Jace is running around in a format. And for everyone that is on the pro, you know, having Jace and having Bloodbraid on the format, that's great. I'm not like discounting that. I think there could be some upside here and some positives to draw away from this. Maybe hopefully in a couple months, you know, it was fine. But for right now, not 24 hours ago, we had the most near perfect format you could possibly ever imagine for a Magic format, and you changed it.
There are some points in this, though, that may not be completely negative. And I know it's very easy to be like, why are you messing with a top-tier format? Probably the best format we've ever had in Magic, to be perfectly honest with you. Maybe since Innistrad, or not Innistrad, maybe since RTR and what was that other block? The one before Ravnica. Maybe it wasn't Innistrad. It was Innistrad, yeah. Innistrad, Ravnica, when we had eight sets for 3 months. Every time I looked at a tournament that got run, whether it was like a local tournament or a big tournament, a different deck won. That's the only time I could ever think of Standard being this diverse. And Modern, like you say, Modern, I've been writing out decks that just are notable decks while we've been sitting here. And it's like, I just start rattling them off. Lantern Control, Blue Red Pyromancer, Mardu Pyromancer, Five Color Humans, Abzan, Death Shadow, Gift Storm, Jeskai and Blue White Control, Merfolk's running around, Elves is running around, Boggles just took down GP, like you mentioned.
Yep.
I've been on Black Red Control forever. There's all sorts of different decks you can play in Modern and have, you know, solid success with. And this is without even mentioning Dredge and Hollow One and some of the other decks that are running around that are graveyard based. You have every option. And here's the plus side. Some archetypes, I think, now have the ability to come back with Bloodbraid Elf. That one I'm much happier about than Jace. Jace the Mind Sculptor concerns me because the control decks were already finally getting strong enough, and we know what happens when control gets too strong in an archetype. It winds up dominating. But Bloodbraid Elf might be the way to take down a card like Jace the Mind Sculptor with consistency. You know what we haven't seen in a long time is a true Zoo deck. Like Naya Zoo, something that people just haven't seen in a while, where you have, you know, Experiment One into Burning Trees, you're playing Tarmogoyfs, you know, however you want to build the deck. If you're playing Naya, you could play Loxodon Smiter, although it's pretty weak. Gore Clan Rampager was your Blood Rush option. But now you have Bloodbraid as a curve topper. Imagine Bloodbraid into another 3-drop with haste, and you could get imaginative with all the possible options that exist in Magic. Hell, you could, I know it's an elf, but I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, four color good stuff running around. You look at the humans decks, probably better for that specifically, but it's also got a weaker mana base is the downside. You could build just a red green aggro deck that doesn't really get hit by Blood Moon too badly. Or look at Ponza. There's another deck that's
Ponza
scary
has been talked about a lot today.
Yeah, Ponza getting Bloodbraid Elf is terrifying. When you have a deck that goes turn one Utopia Sprawl or Arbor Elf, turn two Stone Rain your land, turn three Bloodbraid Stone Rain your land or Molten Rain your land, that's a frightening proposition, because no matter who you are, at best, you're, even if you're on the play, you only have two lands left. Now you have to deal with a 3-2, and they have, you know, twice the mana you do. So next turn, they could just jam a Storm Breath or wind up on an Inferno Titan quickly, and you just don't always have answers for that kind of stuff. The combo decks certainly don't. So there is still a lot of wide open possibility. I'm not too worried about them dominating the format, but I am a little irked that they unbanned those, and they kind of did it at the wrong time. Like I said, three months ago would have been good. I'm trying to look towards the future of what is possible. Now, Jund coming back would be good. I'm scared of Ponza getting better. Blue-white control being the predominant control deck again is probably a good thing. Jeskai is a little, almost not too strong, but a scarier, more versatile version of it. And them getting Jace the Mind Sculptor scares me. But blue-white control with like Gideons and Jaces and just having a Planeswalker deck that people can enjoy and still be competitive with, certainly a positive possibility. What I do want to bring up is you had mentioned decks that were running around and what could have gone the other direction, like what could now get banned in the future. I've heard rumblings of Faithless Looting lately, because you saw it as a 4-of in Hollow One. You saw it as, I believe it was a 4-of in the Pyromancer decks at the Pro Tour. And it's always been a 4-of in Dredge. It's been a 4-of in Reanimator. And the decks that it exists in are already quite powerful. I'm not sure if Bloodbraid Elf specifically slots into those, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Faithless Looting continue to grow in the format. And that could be like a long-term ban. I think Ancient Stirrings, though, right now, and I've always thought this, needs to go. I think
that card definitely is, it has to go.
Once they printed Devoid as a mechanic and gave it that many tools to play with, it became frightening. It went from it exists in a niche area to it exists as engine, a 4-of right. in every colorless deck. It's a green ponder. Green isn't supposed to have card filtering and draw like that. But you're essentially spending a mana and saying, I want one of the top five cards on my deck in my hand.
Green can have it all. It's okay.
Yeah, I know you love your green.
Oh,
but
hell yeah.
It's inherently insane.
No, and
it's not really surprising to see Lantern Control take down the entire tournament running 4-of Ancient Stirrings. Also, the War of Invention I thought was a pretty nice touch in that deck. I think that deck is really cool.
I like that too.
So there was a lot of unique new stuff in that Lantern Control deck. I hadn't really seen much War of Invention running around in those decks. So it's new, it's good. That deck is fine. But without Ancient Stirrings, would Lantern Control be able to exist? Would Tron be able to be successful? The card makes those decks oppressive. And a lot of players don't like playing against oppressive decks. That's just a fact.
You have to understand that a lot of the player base now has not played with these cards while they were legal. I mean, Jace was never legal in Modern, and a lot of folks that play Modern these days have never played against it. So I think pretty quickly people are going to realize why this card was banned in the first place. And now, again, I know there's a lot of tools in Modern these days, and I do know that Jace, there's definitely room for Jace to not be as good as it used to be. But, you know, it's just one of those cards that, you know, it's just one of those decisions that you just could have left it well enough alone. But, and, you know, folks are going to hear a lot of different takes on this unbanning this week. I'm sure they're going to read a lot of articles, a lot from our writers, a lot from other podcasts. Purely, you know, and we're on a financial-based, you know, financial-driven and focused podcast. This is 100% an awesome, this couldn't have been better for folks that are, you know, trying to look for another spark in the market again. So from that perspective, I'm totally happy with this. Like, this is, you know, me just looking at this from a player and being kind of, you know, snarky or being kind of a little annoyed at that, what they did and what, you know, their reasoning was, I kind of just threw that all out the window. From purely a financial aspect, this couldn't have been better, you know, for a huge, you know, injection of steroids pretty much into the Modern market. And, you know, this is going to get, this is going to cause a lot of interest in the format again, regardless of, you know, folks' stance on, you know, if it's a good thing or not. There is a lot of hype generated from this. There is a Masters 25 set that will kind of offset some of the, I guess, you know, secondary damage that, was, you know, done today. But, and I do think that they will print a lot of the kind of, tools to fight Jace and tools that complement Jace. I do think a lot of stuff that's going to be in there because they plan this all ahead. So again, I think it's a great and awesome announcement for folks that were looking to get some you know, just anything back into the modern market. It kind of was a little stale there for quite some time. For anyone that was following modern, like the very cyclical nature of modern, you know, kind of, you know, tempered a little bit. It wasn't the same as it was, you know, for a while there. And that had to do a lot with previous Modern Master sets. But, you know, when you force feed a little bit of hype into the format and into the market, I do think that's a good thing, especially because another reprint set is coming up. And Tarkan and I talked about this, that, you know, they kind of needed to cool it a little bit with these master sets, despite, you know, them listening to the player base. I mean, the player base wanted reprints. Wizards gave them reprints. And I'll be the first to tell you that, you know, I don't view Wizards in a negative light, and I don't think they do, you know, messed up and scummy things. You know, I know that was one of the kind of questions that we had. Wizards to me has been nearly perfect as a steward of the game. You know, Magic has been going on for quite some time. They cultivated and created a very, very good format, despite, you know, Standard being a hot mess. And I think, you know, as arbiters and stewards of their game and their IP, they've done a really good job over the years. The only thing I disagree with is that this was a blatant cash grab. Like, I know we've been through like invocations and masterpieces and stuff like that. That didn't really bother me as much because, you know, you need to kind of incentivize folks to, you know, buy product. And I get that. It's a business at the end of the day. But, you know, basically forcing people into buying a master set that you don't want to flop and pigeonholing them is a little different than adding a lottery card into packs. So that's really what got me.
It is what you mentioned before, too. You asked me about how does this affect stores? Well, availability is very, very difficult everywhere. Everywhere I look online for Magic players that I know right now, it's anybody buying Blood Braids, anybody selling Jace the Mind Sculptors, anybody buying Jace the Mind Sculptors. And it just turned into this insane marketplace. But from everyone I've talked to at my LGS, Blood Braids, sure, that's not so bad. The cards had, I think, 5 printings plus an FNM promo.
Yeah.
Trying to think. I think it was in Anthologies. It was in
Plane Chase, Masters. Commander. Yeah, Plane Chase, Eternal Masters, Commander, and Alara.
Yeah, so at least 4. I feel like there's another random one, too, plus the FNM promo. Yeah, so that has plenty of printings. The first guy I asked, like, hey, do you have any Bloodbraid Elves? He goes, dude, I've got 16 of them lying around. That's not going to hold a crazy price tag. I don't think people are just going to sell out of it. It'll go down to like $5 or whatever eventually, especially when people see that not everybody can play Bloodbraid Elf. You can't just be playing Merfolk and be like, I'm going to splash red for Bloodbraid. It doesn't work that way. Essentially, you're going to see Jund players come out of the woodwork again, and you might see some Zoo players come out of the woodwork, and Ponza might throw it in. That's about it. Jace the Mind Sculptor is a whole different animal. The card was already over $100 in some places. I think a few of the sets had it all as low as 80, depending on the printing.
Right.
And I like I said at the beginning of this podcast, it's up to 200. That was a little bit of an exaggeration. I've seen sales get up there for the original ones. They're already coming back down. People are, they've now that they've acquired them, are trying to throw them up so they get sold immediately. You can pick up the nearly like lightly played ones at like 160. So it's not so bad, but the availability in an individual area, nobody at my LGS has $160 to just go and slam online on a Jace the Mind Sculptor. So they would need to trade in cards to a store. They would need to use store credit. And our store might have one of them, 2 maximum if you're lucky. There's probably 6 control players at my store. There's just not enough to go around. And that's the worst part. You're not only cash grabbing with the new set that you're releasing and pigeonholing us into buying things, but you're forcing it so heavily that when you get to a point in between, you know, Masters 25 has a release date set up. There's going to be, I believe, another B&R announcement in April before that set even comes out. So there's still time to undo this. But for that time period, once this goes live on what, Friday, I think it takes effect. Is that correct? This Friday or next Friday? There's going to be like a
2/4/2/19. So from Monday.
Next Monday.
On paper.
Right. So you have from February 19th to, you have a couple of months of people playing with cards that you just may not have access to. You're in a Jeskai control mirror and a guy slams Jace the Mind Sculptor and you didn't have $160 and you play locals. That's demoralizing. It's frustrating.
It's very frustrating.
You need to make the unbans along with the set and not hype it up for 4 months. And I think their plan this time was that maybe there would be some larger events happening that would spark more interest. What happens if somebody shows shows up and wins the Pro Tour with Ponza, and now everybody wants Bloodbraid Elf? What happens if somebody shows up and wins with blue-white Control, and now Control is now the king of the modern meta because it can stop all the combo decks because you have counter spells and aggro can't seem to beat it fast enough? Well, that's tricky. Now you're in this bad spot where people are upset for a couple of months. You may just have less players playing across the board by the time you get to the set. So it's just not a good place to be for the game. I think they did this 2 months too soon or 3 months too late, however you want to look at it. If they had done the unbanning and then the Pro Tour was coming up, people had some time. I still wouldn't have liked that. I would have loved the idea of, hey, it's April 16th. Modern's still really healthy, but here's some new possible alternatives coming into the summer when people are going to have more time to play because, you know, school's out. We have a lot of younger youth, more youthful people in the game. You have the entire summer strip, and then the set comes out, and it's winning across the board. So they just jumped the gun is what it boils down to. Yeah. So I hope you're one of the lucky few that has a Jace the Mind Sculptor sitting in your collection, or you had a playset of Bloodbraid lying around if you like playing these cards, because otherwise you just kind of might be up a creek for a few months.
So I don't think your take changes that much, but Guillaume, so one of our writers and analysts, it comes out March 16th, so that is next month. But
that's not so bad then. For some reason I thought it was a June set, so I appreciate that. Whoever mentioned that.
Yeah, that's Guillaume. That's one of our writers and analysts. So.
All right, I appreciate the correction then, because that isn't so bad. But you're still looking at a little over a month's worth of just getting trounced by these cards when people have them. Let's say that I'm one of the guys who not grinds weeklies, but, you know, I like to hang out at my LGS two or three nights a week. That's, 24 events I could probably have played that I could lose to these cards I don't have at any given time. Who knows? But on the other
hand, they tax a lot of players, and you know, you basically force them into buying either the new set or go out and spend an extra, you know, couple hundred bucks just to get the playset of Jace. But that's even like, I understand, you know, a price tag. They can't recognize the price tag, right? Like if they are going to unban a card, it's going to spike no matter pretty much what it is at this point. I mean, the same thing happened even with Golgari Grave Troll. It ended up getting banned later. But, you know, it's just for me, these specific cards, like, they're so volatile and they're so, you know, polarizing. The format went on and it became as perfect as it possibly could be without them. That's like my whole thing, is that everyone was clamoring for an unban. Everyone unban. But, you know, I just don't understand. Like, I can see all the arguments. Like, if you're telling me Stoneforge Mystic and, you know, Bloodbraid Elf and Jace the Mind Sculptor is 100% safe to be unbanned in the modern, you know, that's fine for me. But what's really the point if the format is 100% fine or 99.8% fine? Like, why even bother? That's kind of my whole stance as a player, is that even if they're 100% safe and the cards are fine, they don't need to be on the ban list, but it doesn't matter either way. So for me, just leave them on there. Like, because the format is thriving on its own without those cards.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
It's an old adage for a reason. I mean, I just, that was my whole thing. I think, you know, people kind of got lost a little bit. I could be very, like, kind of, you know, animated when it comes to this stuff. But, I mean, for, you know, all our discussions today, it sparked, like, amazing, crazy discussions. And for good reason. And like I said before, for a financially driven and focused, Discord server, and for insiders that, you know, are sub to the site, and for this podcast, this was a huge boon to the market in terms of, well, what do we do now? Now that, like, they're kind of out of their cage, what are we looking for? So what are you looking for in the immediate aftermath, Pete? We sent out an email earlier. We kind of highlighted a whole bunch of different cards. What are you looking at? Because we looked at, you know, cards that complement Jace, cards that complement Bloodbraid Elf, cards that combat those cards. For me, what I really liked, and again, this is all barring a Masters 25 reprint, I think a lot of the cards that we talked about will actually end up in that set. Because they kind of want to push the whole, hey, Jace and Blood Raider back, so let's reprint a whole bunch of the cards that are good with them. Like Celestial Colonnade, I'm like 99.5% sure that card is in the set.
Yeah, if Colonnade's not in the new set,
it's like an $80 card.
Afraid of, I'm afraid of what the price would become. You know, yeah, it's already $56.
Yeah, it's like $60. I mean, for a Celestial Colony. I mean, it's nuts. But what we looked at immediately, Pete, was Dreadbore.
Yep, that was at the top of my list. Dreadbore and Abrupt Decay are the two.
So Dreadbore had two printings. It has an Arch Enemy printing and it's Return to Ravnica. I don't know about normals so much, but I mean, hey, it's sitting at like $2. I still think even with the two printings, it can kind of start increasing to $8. And I think it's going to be in a lot of sideboards or maybe even main decks here soon. And I'll let you kind of retort on all this. Gaddock Teeg.
Gaddock Teeg is already kind of spiked.
Yeah, it's like in the $15 range, but I mean, it did kind of increase to like the $25, $30 range at one point.
I'm going to go on the obvious side. A card that everybody forgot about that was once upon a time a $200 staple that's down to under $60 you can pick them up for. If Jund comes back, Tarmogoyf could hit $100 again easy.
It's even good with old Tarmogoyf.
Good old Tarmogoyf. They're the same price as Dark Confidants right now. And I never thought I would see the day that that happened, although reasonably speaking, you know, there's the cycle of overpowered two drops that just exist. One for each color. Black has Bob, Dark Confidant. Green has Tarmogoyf. Blue has Snapcaster Mage.
Yep.
White has Stoneforge Mystic. And you can make the argument now, and I've been saying it for years, and I finally get to be vindicated with this last Pro Tour. Young Pyromancer is the red one, even though it's not a rare. So Dark Confidant is another one that could actually spike. It only had the 2015 reprints, which people strayed away from that set because cards came out damaged. And it had the original Modern Masters reprint, which, you know, original Modern Masters cards all have gone way, way up. And the only other printings of it are the original one for Ravnica, which was a lowly open set, and the Judge promos. So Dark Confidant, if Jund exploded, could easily randomly go from, you know, the 40s or 50s it's at now back up to maybe 70. I wouldn't be surprised to see Goyfs go up from between 75 to 100 on average again. This is all assuming Bloodbraid makes Jund good.
Yep.
Liliana of the Veil, another big piece of that deck. It hit 100 and it slowly started creeping down. And it didn't creep down really hard, but the Modern Masters 2017 printing, it got it down to about 70. And people are already aware, and the market price now is back up to about 83, 84, 86 for the originals. That could go right back up to 100. It's not a huge marginal gain, but it's still definitely something to keep an eye on, especially if you have the RPTQ promos.
Yep.
I love the Dreadbore pick. There's only one foil printing of Dreadbore.
One foil printing from Ravnica, yep.
Right. So RTR's foil printing is something to definitely keep an eye on.
I grabbed four foils at five each. I thought that was really strong. I know folks actually picked them a lot up earlier today. But a couple others that we talked about were Kolaghan's Command. We talked about...
Oh my God, I didn't even think of that. Bloodbraid got banned before Kolaghan's Command got prevalent.
Yep.
Oh God, that makes me a little sick inside. K-Command was not seeing as much play as it should have. Kolaghan's Command is probably the reason I still play Black-Red as a card. It is the most inherently insanely powerful card that people don't even realize because it is instant speed discard against any creature-based deck. Like, just on their draw step, discard your card, get back a card is kind of nuts. I see the comment in the corner about collective brutality. That was actually already on my list. I did remember collective brutality, I promise.
Okay, that's
but
good.
But I spaced on Kolaghan's Command.
Yeah.
Collective brutality has been everywhere. Especially, it's pretty much taken Burn out of the metagame. If you really think about it, when's the last time you saw a Burn deck do really well? For a while, it was showing up at two at a pop into top eights of big events. And suddenly, Burn doesn't exist. Blue-Red Pyromancer exists. That's the closest you have to a Burn deck right now. But traditional Boros Burn or the Naya Burn that had a Tarka's Command running around, those don't really exist. However, imagine a Burn deck that just goes up a couple of lands. I guess you're just on Zoo then. Zoo is the other deck that could come back. So you might see some completely arbitrary random spikes in cards like Goblin Guide could go up again if Zoo came back with a Bloodbraid Elf Curve Topper. Or I mentioned Loxodon Smiter earlier. That's like a dollar card. So I still think there's just stronger three drops. But Kolaghan's Command's not the only command in the cycle that might be worth it. Imagine going Bloodbraid Elf into a Tarka's Command when you already have a field. I'll three you in +1/+1 my team, including the Bloodbraid doesn't. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It's a cast trigger, so it doesn't get the +1/+1, but still. Threeing them and pumping the rest of your team, possibly evolving an experiment one on landing, Zoo could definitely see that. Yeah, so all like you said, all the cards that complement Bloodbraid Elf. I'm going to get off the Bloodbraid Elf tangent for a second here, because I'm sure we even have so much time left. And I'm going to shift over to cards that, A, combat Jace the Mind Sculptor, because all the cards that combat Bloodbraid Elf already exist. Like, you know, Fatal Push is everywhere. That kills a Bloodbraid. Bolt still kills Bloodbraid, etc. But Jace the Mind Sculptor, Planeswalkers are a little bit trickier to deal with. Dreadbore is a card that could do it. Hero's Downfall, if you're on a harder black control deck, if you're playing Esper or Black Red or any of those decks, Hero's Downfall probably won't see a huge spike, but that's another card that was only printed twice. Once in that weird little, what was it? I think it was
It was a dual deck, I think.
Yeah,
it did have a promo. I'm not entirely sure.
There are three cards that and Black Red I play with to deal with Planeswalkers, and they are Hero's Downfall, Dreadbore is the primary one, and I was playing To the Slaughter for a while because Ally of Zendikar scared
Mike knows.
And now that brings me to the complementary cards.
Yep,
Blue Weight Control is now a terrifying, scary, scary deck. It already had Gideon Ally of Zendikar taking over games and curving out a Gideon Jura. It was basically playing the Gideon Tribal deck. Now that they have the new Jace Planeswalker rule, you could see Jace the Mind Sculptor complemented with both Baby Jace Bellerin and Jace Architect of Thought, a card that costs like $2 right now.
Jace Vryn's Prodigy.
Yeah, and Jace, oh God, Baby Jace, the baby Jace, Vryn's Prodigy too.
Little Jace.
I can't believe I live in a universe where you can pick up Jace Architect of Thought for under $1.
Yeah.
And Tybalt is $2. Like, it hurts my brain because Jace Architect of Thought, when that lands against me in a control deck, that's a scary card. They're going to probably refill their hand by going -2 immediately, and then you have to get rid of the damn thing.
Yep.
And Tybalt, by the way, has two printings also. They're more expensive than the Jace printings. So just food for thought on the low end. That hurts. I think the average might be Jace's favor a little. But what else is really complimentary? Path to Exile had trickled down.
I when we were discussing earlier, we had a tweet by someone else posted it. It was by a pro about what would happen if Jace should never come back. I'm blanking on the pro's name, but it's a card that came up a lot today. A lot in our discussions. I didn't see much. Burkhardt. There. Thank you. Corey Burkhardt, and he talked about if Jace ever came back, you should buy Disrupting Shoal. So that's like kind of why it was on our list today. And you know, it's a one printing card. I know Modern Masters 25 is kind of right next month, but it could see a little bit of a bump as early as this week because you know folks are pretty much out there clamoring for to start playing with Jace.
Well, Disrupting Shoal is not the only one in the cycle, but Disrupting Shoal is the one that plays nicely with the rest of them. The Shoals are aggravating. Like Nourishing Shoal, I remember I picked up a playset of them for 99 cents. And then 6 months later, somebody used World Spine Worms in a Goryeo's Grizzle brand. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting on $15 bulk rares and just sold them immediately because what's the point?
Right.
Disrupting Shoal actually did see a little bit of a spike. If you go into its history, it hit, I believe, $14 as well before trickling back down to 10 about on average.
Yep.
It's 10.02 right now. So, yeah, Disrupting Shoal definitely could see play with Jace to counter other Jaces in theory. But that
or
is
Cryptic Commands.
Yeah, it also counters Cryptic Commands, and it also counters a lot of the bombs in other people's decks. Ironically, including Bloodbraid Elf, but it doesn't counter the Cascade spell, which is the problem with Disrupting Shoal. I stand by Path to Exile because Jace is going to show up in blue, white, and possibly blue, white X decks. Path to Exile is under $10, and it still has somewhat limited printings over the course of its history. There's like five of them total, I think, and they're still holding steady at 7. A lot of them are hard to come by these days. It's not like everybody opened Conflux. Blue-white's kind of a weird one, though. Cryptic Command could just spike on its own, being Cryptic Command.
Do you like Seachrome Coast and Hallowed Fountain? I mean, Hallowed Fountain, the Return to Ravnica copies are like $6-7.
You know, I was going to bring this up if we went out on a tangent, this is a little bit off-topic, but Botanical Sanctum right now is everywhere. there was, you know, Blue Green Merfolk is a thing. It's in the Lantern Control deck that just won the Pro Tour. It was seeing bizarre play in the Zoo decks. It was part of the Teemer Control deck, or I'm sorry, the Teemer Midrange deck that was dominating Standard that got banned. That card was just running around all over the place. And I think people are finally seeing how good fast lands are in general.
Yep.
I'm okay with Seachrome Coast. I'm way more okay with Hallowed Fountain because shocks are due for a spike if they are not in Masters 25. Shocks have kind of been lingering there for a while. It's been a little while since we've actually had the printings of them, is what people aren't realizing. We had the expeditions.
Yeah, and, you know, while, you know, there is a viable blue-white control list, I mean, Hallowed Fountain was kind of one of the ones that weren't, you know, as meta or as tier as the other shocklands. Now, I mean, with Jace, I mean, everyone's going to be clamoring to just play blue-white just to play with Jace, just to play blue and with Jace. So I think $6 Hallowed Fountains, to, at the very least, I think it can match, they can increase the match to match the Dissension versions.
I am more on the train of Spire Bluff Canal than I am of Seachrome Coast.
Yeah.
And the reason being is because the day that the enemy colored Fastlands got spoiled, I was pre-ordering every Spire Bluff Canal I could get my hands on. Blue-red has always been the most inherently broken combination of colors in Magic. Everybody knows this. It is a terrifying color combo. Blue-red Pyromancer just top aided the Pro Tour. And Jeskai Control is one of the decks that's likely going to play Jace the Mind Sculptor as a curve topper, so it loosely relates. But Seachrome Coast and Spire Bluff Canal are the same price, and I think for the long-term investment, Spire Bluff Canal one day is going to see a spike up to $20.
Yeah.
I don't know when it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen one day. It's similar to how Blackleaf Cliffs wound up at, I believe, oh my god, it's $35 right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so glad I was on that train early. But that's kind of the point that I'm trying to get at, is that those fast lands are very good. There's nothing wrong with Seachrome Coast. That's not what I'm saying. That's definitely probably a $10 land sooner than later. But Spire Bluff Canal is needed a little bit more for the color fixing in the Jeskai decks. And Seachrome Coast kind of just is a land where when you're only in blue-white, you're going to be on a lot of basics. You're going to be on your Hallowed Fountains. I wouldn't be surprised to see Glacial Fortresses in that deck before I would see Seachrome Coasts. So fair. It's just something to keep in mind.
So we're going to have some – we're kind of getting – we don't want to run this too long. We're going to have an opportunity for questions real quick because I know a lot of stuff has happened. I'm going to go real quick and run through some of the questions that were already posted before we really started casting.
Definitely.
But when we – I know Masters 25 is right around the corner, Pete, and I know you kind of have your allocation for that. I know you're kind of planning for that. But in the immediate short term, are we going – like if – you know, for your stores, if you're going in and you're talking to your buyers, is there something – you know, anything that, you know, we can talk about, at least for here, to kind of, are there specific cards that you're being aggressive on right now? Like, even if they're in Masters 25, you still want to have them.
Well, I mentioned shocks already. I wouldn't hate to pick those up even with Masters 25 coming out because it's still a solid long-term investment. It's really tricky to be aggressive right now because buyouts are happening everywhere.
Yep.
And the inflation of prices as a result of the last 3 days. If you weren't aggressive a couple days ago, being aggressive now might wind up biting you in the long run. Cards I'm being a little bit aggressive on right now are just a half. Just make sure you have play sets of these. And these are not super expensive cards at the moment. War of Invention, because it just won the Pro Tour, and it's like $4, and you can probably pick them up in trade binders pretty easily. Just people have them lying around. A lot of blue cards right now. Thing in the Ice. I could see that seeing play kind of alongside Jace as a backup plan, because there's nothing wrong with slamming Jace after you flip a Thing in the Ice. That means their board can't answer it as easily. Additionally, Thing in the Ice is just already a good card that's under $5. You remember Release Weekend for that card?
Yeah, it's like
it was
20
bucks.
Bucks. Yeah, 15,
yeah,
20 bucks.
It's insane. This is a card that's only has one printing, and Shadows over Innistrad was not exactly the most open set. You know, it had a reasonable amount of people opening it, but it's a long-term, likely will go up over time investment card. Thing in the Ice is just, it's a good card. It's a very solid card that you can build entire decks around.
And so plays well with Jace.
Yeah, that's on the top of my list. If you can find foil Dreadbores anywhere below $5, buy all of them.
Yep.
You had already mentioned that
do
one.
You, so do you even like normals at like a buck or two?
I like them at a dollar if you can get them for a dollar.
Okay.
Again, these are low risk. I'm not saying buy them all unless right. I'm being very specific. Dreadbores under $5 for foils, buy them all.
Right.
But for just to have, you know, pick up your playsets. None of these investments are going to cost you more than $5 to $10 in trade most of the time. I do like saying that Seachrome Coast isn't a bad thing to have. I stand by Spire Bluff Canal, even though it's still technically legal and standard. Getting your hands on playsets of fast lands are almost as important now, if not more important, with the speed of modern over time, because it always seems to get a little bit faster. It's almost more important to have those than it is to have shock lands in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Fetch lands are kind of on a mini dip right now as well, that nobody's paying attention to. You know, fetch lands have always been a staple. That's just the way it is. But that's another thing that you might see wind its way into Masters 25. If they really don't want the set to flop and they want everyone to buy them, I wouldn't be surprised for them to sneak enemy colored fetches into that set. It's certainly a possibility. They were already, what, in the Masters 2017?
Fetches? Those were the Zendikar ones.
Yeah, the enemy ones.
Yep, yep.
Okay, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see just all 10. It's possible. I make no guarantees, but like, you know, Windswept Heaths are $10 right now. So if Zoo came back, it wouldn't be a bad thing to have them. I think Wooded Foothills are around 15 ish. Yeah, $15, $16. If you can pick up Wooded Foothills for under 20s in trade, that's really not so bad for the long term, because Bloodbraid Elf is red and green. So you're prepared in case one of those decks just completely goes out of its mind. Expeditions are all really low right now. Those are not terrible pickups, but once again, that's something you're trying to peel from people in trades. Don't go out spending cash on them. And I would say if you have Bloodbraids right now, you should probably unload them, reasonably speaking. Even if the deck does well with Bloodbraid Elf, there's too many printings, and the card was too popular too recently for a spike of this magnitude to stick around. But that's about as aggressive as I get right now. I'm afraid, as a financial investor in the game of Magic, to go too heavily with Masters 25 cards possibly right. being spoiled soon. There aren't too many cards I think that we need to get printed that won't be in there. And a lot of the ones that I doubt will be in there that you would think of kind of already spiked. Ensnaring Bridge is a perfect example. That card just won a Pro Tour, and I was already looking at that for other decks that weren't even Lantern Control. So Ensnaring Bridge is a good card. And I am fairly certain that we're going to get a Chalice of the Void reprint.
Right.
Because I don't think Wizards wants Chalice of the Void being a $90 to $100 card when it was just a basic rare and had two printings. I don't want that either. That's dumb.
Yeah.
That's way too expensive.
And I'm
afraid of Chalice spiking again, actually, if it's not reprinted. It could just be $100 forever.
So, Pete, I think that was a good... You know, a good selection of cards to keep an eye on. And you're right, it is a kind of a weird timing. We know, obviously, Jace kind of increased. I know there will probably be some increases regardless of Masters 25 because, you know, I think folks are just going to be a little more bullish on some of the supporting cast and take their chances that they don't get reprinted. Although, I think there's some obvious ones that you should stay away from. But the cards that I'm specifically talking about in terms of I don't think I have to be as worried are cards like Kolaghan's Command. Like, I don't think that's on the top of the list of being in Masters 25. I think a lot of the supporting cards like Celestial Colonnade, maybe even Terminus, cards like Gaddock Teague, those probably have a really good shot at being in Masters 25. But a card like Kolaghan's Command, you know, and it was mentioned earlier that even Louis Scott Vargas was like, you know, Kolaghan's Command is one of the best cards in the format with Bloodbraid Elf is legal. That's not too far off. And, you know, we talked about Blightning too, but I mean, Kolaghan's Command is pretty much just a better Blightning. So I love Kolaghan's Command under like $15.
Well, you know that I was one of the perpetuators of that stupid rack archetype popping up way back when.
Yeah.
And I can tell you from experience and a lot of extensive testing that Blightning's just not very good right now, and it's not going to get better. There is an argument to be made that Blightning is playable against Jace the Mind Sculptor if they go drop Jace and Brainstorm. then you can go kill your Jace on the damage redirect and make you discard two cards. But they probably hid the cards you need off the Brainstorm anyway, and that's best case scenario. Meanwhile, Kolaghan's command is just way too versatile. If they're able to get rid of one of your cards, you just go get it back. That's why Mardu Pyromancer, I think, was so good. Being able to chain Bedlam Revelers and then get them back on top of it.
Yeah.
It's a scary, scary concept.
It's very insane.
Yeah, I'm probably going to start playing Jund. I'm not going to lie to you. I think that I'm just being honest. Like, I never wanted to play Jund, but being able to Bloodbraid Elf with Kolaghan's command and Collective Brutality sounds insane. I was already liking it with Liliana. The card's just really good. And
The other one that I think, you know, we should, you know, I actually bought a few. I bought a foil because they're just really old at this point. I did tuck away a couple copies of Disrupting Shoal, including a foil, because you know, it's just one of those cards that just, it may not end up being anything, but I think that is all just going to be driven by hype, and I will certainly sell into that. But who knows? I mean, I do think it has stock enough to start increasing from like $8 back to up to like the $15, $16 mark, $18 even. Once folks really start clamoring to just play this alongside with Jace. But Kolaghan's Command, Dreadbore, Disrupting Shoal, I really like. And Thing in the Ice was a great card to mention because not only were they already viable, we saw in the Pro Tour, but I mean, like you said, I think they pair well, really well with Jace also. And I love foils. I mean, I think foils are great. I think normals are good to stash away. But yeah.
I still, after all this, the whole conversation we just had, the thing that blows my mind the most right now of everything we just talked about is that Blackleaf Cliffs is a $40 card. I can't get my head around that. And I'm looking at them, the cheap ones that are like, I'm looking at TCG Player right now. The three cheapest things that are for sale are all foils. They're heavily played foils at $40. The actual regular Blackleaf Cliffs are being sold for $45, despite what the market price says. Lightly Plays are $47. That card exploded. And if you're not going to play Jund and you're sitting on Blackleaf Cliffs, I can't imagine Blackleaf Cliffs, the fast land, ever going above $40. So recommendations are to sell, sell, sell. Throw it up there, get your $40, be happy, because eventually they'll reprint those fast lands. It will happen. That's actually one of the things I'm afraid of in Masters 25. I'm considering selling my foil Blackleaf Cliffs. Because they might just get reprinted if I don't want to hang on to the foils. If I had regular ones, though, regulars are more what I'm talking about, just get rid of them. Because the second that card gets reprinted, it's $20 maximum.
I doubt even that.
$8. That's mind-blowing to me. Seachrome Coast is like $6. Dark Slick Shores is like $8. Razor Verge Thicket is like $7. They're all normally priced. Blackleaf Cliffs. $40 magic card.
That's the one.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, Colonnade too. I mean, all those, this is the only one from the cycle. I mean, Raging Ravine was a card for a while. Could actually be a card again, but Lava Claw.
Raging Ravine might be a good thing to mention at this point in time. If Jund is around, Raging Ravine is going to become a one or two of in Jund again, and it's under $10.
Yep. And Raging Ravine as a one of was like what, Pete? I mean, they were like, I chat, help me out here. They're like $15 at one point.
They got higher than that. They hit 20 at one point.
They got higher than that. I love Raging Ravine.
Foil Raging Ravine is still $60. It's only got one printing and it's from Worldwake.
Yep.
So that would be another card that I just kind of thought of it as we went and you mentioned it. But yeah, Raging Ravines, if you can pick up some of those for the on the cheap side with Bloodbraid Elf coming back, you should probably do that.
Yep. last quick, some questions. Oh yeah. Biospark Celestial Colonnade, $70. Lava Claw Reaches, 50 cents. Yeah. That's
That sounds
magic.
Right.
That's
Lava
magic.
Claw Reaches is a god awful card from a guy who played it for a year. Every time I played it, I was basically sad.
So real quick, we're going to do questions real quickly. I'm rolling back through real quick. Hold on. Give me one second. Trying to find. So yeah, we talked about Brandon's. We talked about Wizards. You know, and we try not to focus on, you know, the downside of Wizards. I mean, they do make some boneheaded they really do make some boneheaded decisions. And this is one of those decisions that it's not that I don't agree with it. I just kind of don't like the blatant like cash grab of it. Like, I understand it's a business. Don't get me wrong. I mean, when we're in a financial, you know, Discord server and we host a financial podcast, so I get it. But it was just so blatant. Like, it wasn't even like, you know, I don't know. I just thought, you know, could have a little more finesse around that. But I don't know if I, okay. Do I need to chip in and buy American Gladiator Poles fight set for some real Chaz versus Tarkan action? Yeah, actually, we should look into that. I think we should look into that. if I missed a question, okay, so I don't think I missed any. Do we like Snapcaster Mage? So that was actually from Guillaume.
Snapcaster Mage. Snapcaster Mage is kind of a toss-up. That's one of the ones on the fringe of is it or is it not in Masters 25. Because it had its second print plus the RPTQ promo. You know, it's at $60 now.
Snap Back, the Time Spiral pitch card. What card is that? Snap Back.
I know. I don't know this time.
Wow, this is actually a card. My God.
You may remove a blue card
in your hand from the game rather than return target creature to its owner's hand.
I don't recommend
that. No, we don't want that.
I wouldn't. I would recommend Trick Bind above Snapback.
Jace's Downfall.
I mean, it's an uncommon. You'll be able to find them. So if you're worried
foils?
About
foils, do we like foils?
Nah, probably not.
No, we don't. Okay.
They're too recent. If you wanted one, you would never play more than one in a sideboard anyway. I think you could probably pick up a foil for like 50 cents. If you want it because you want to play it, go for it. Yeah. I understand why. It's a reasonable thought. Like, that's definitely a decent answer to Jace. But look at it this way. When Tron was everywhere, Ceremonious Rejection, a card that countered the entirety of the deck except for Ancient Stirrings, the card that just said no to Tron. Foils of that, while being played in Standard, never hit higher than, I think, $6 at their very highest. So, like, if you want to take the 50-cent risk on one copy, go for it. But you wouldn't make a mint picking up Jace's Downfall foils.
All right. Any last really quick questions, burning questions? Because we are wrapping it up. I think we're a little bit, but that's okay. Pete, I appreciate the extra time. Cole against Command Ceiling.
That's a good question. That's a very good question. As of now, 30.
I think 25. Yeah, 25 non-foils.
This is all non-foil.
Yeah, I'm going like a solid mid-20s easily.
Yeah, I think the absolute ceiling is $30. I think that if it doesn't get reprinted in Masters 25, that'll help push it along. I think that if Jund wins a Pro Tour or wins a Classic or something, doesn't have to be a Pro Tour, sorry, that's a little excessive, but wins like an Open or a Classic. Yeah, I could see K-Command hitting anywhere between 25 and 30 pretty easily, as long as things go right for it. I could see it happening sooner than later, too. The promos and the foils, that's another thing to keep an eye on in the market, is there's now a difference between pack foils and pre-release promos. And Dragons of Tarkir was the first set, I think, to be like, we have different pre-release promos every card. And those are $22 right now, but they're pretty hard to find. So that $22 mark may not be that low sometime in the future. So if you're one of those guys that likes pre-release promos, and I'm one of the rare ones, but I definitely do love the date stamp, get them now for sure, especially if you can get them for $20.
Yep. All right, folks, that is going to do it for our Snapcast, Flashcast rather. Snap, Flash, they're both Magic cards. All right, Pete, I really appreciate it. Thank you for the insight on the stores. Thank you for the insight on this kind of crazy unbanning, but Snapcast, Snapbolt, yeah.
Yep.
That's going to end it tonight. So Chaz and Pete Casella signing out. Where can they find you on the internet, Pete?
I'm on Facebook if you have questions. I'm pretty open, so feel free to ask me questions. I don't mind. Yep.
Honestly, you know, the at on the Discord, I think you check pretty often, too.
I'm not as big into Discord. I pop on every once in a while. The best places to find me, Facebook Messenger. I do write articles. And if you ever post anything in the Blitzkrieg thread on MTG Salvation, I will read it. Guaranteed.
All right. You can find my work on QS. And the best place to find me is the QS Insider Discord. All right, folks, that is going to do it for tonight. Thanks for stopping in. We'll see you all next time, or later in the week, rather. Yeah.